It's Ask Ag Today with Doug Faulkner.
Good afternoon and welcome to Ask Ag Today. Coming up on today's program, the Yorkton 4-H Spring Steer and Heifer Show is on this weekend at the Yorkton Exhibition Grounds. We'll talk with Caitlin McMurphy, who is a director with the Yorkton Exhibition Association. She'll tell us all about it. With strong cattle prices, the Livestock Price Insurance Program is offering the highest floor prices in the program's history. We will hear from Kevin Hirsch of SaskAgToday.com on that. The East Central Research Foundation and Suncrest College, based in Yorkton, has released the results of another crop study. Mike Hall is the research coordinator there, and they studied if barley varieties should be managed differently. We'll have his report on that. All of those stories and much more coming up on today's edition of Sask Ag Today. But first, it's time for the Agriculture Outlook with Precision Weather. And that's a presentation of Milligan Bio. Milligan Bio now offers bio-meal for your livestock, giving your animals more protein, more energy, and more of what they need. It's also brought to you by Sean Prahitka, your REMAX Blue Chip Ag Division Specialist. Welcome back to Sask Ag Today. The Yorkton 4-H Spring Steer and Heifer Show is on this weekend at the Yorkton Exhibition Grounds. Caitlin McMurphy is a director with the Yorkton Exhibition Association, and she tells us what's planned for Thursday, Friday, and Saturday.
We have 21 clubs coming to see us this weekend. 150 of those are 4-H members, and we have 142 animals coming to the show. So like you said, it starts on Thursday and runs till Saturday. So the members on Thursday will be busy grooming their animals in the team grooming competition. We'll have our opening ceremonies. Friday, things really ramp up. Of course, we have our jackpot show and our judging competition and showmanship competitions. And then Thursday is the big open show, the 4-H Steer and Heifer Show, starting at 9 a.m.
She notes there will be a special auction on Friday night.
Yeah, you can't forget our world-famous pie auction. So our pie auction happens at 7 p.m. And right before that, we have our talent contest as well on Friday. So that's Friday at 7.
McMurphy says the general public is welcome to check out any part of the Spring Steer and Heifer Show.
That's right. It's an open event. There's no cost for you to come and watch and take a look at the animals and see the kids working on their animals and competing.
She notes she used to be an exhibitor at the show, and it brings back a lot of fond memories for her.
That's right. It was one of the funnest shows to attend, and there's many members from across the province that can attest to that and are also involved in the planning committee as well. And so it's just important to make sure that the same opportunities we had as kids in 4-H are given to the next generation as well.
McMurphy adds that you don't have to be a farm kid to join 4-H.
That's right. So 4-H, of course, this is a beef show, but it's an extensive program. There are 4-H clubs that focus on things like sewing and home economics, cooking, all sorts of animals from sheep and goats, and you name it. So although it's a diverse program, the core components that are really important is, of course, it's teaching kids about networking and making connections, life skills like public speaking and record keeping. And quite often you'll hear employers as well that when they see kids that have 4-H on their resume, that's an extra level of confidence, knowing that the kids have been through that program and have developed some of those really important life skills already.
And she says that 4-H clubs from right across the prairies often attend the show.
That's right. So I'm not sure what our provincial spread is, but in the past we have had kids from Manitoba, Saskatchewan, and Alberta come to this show.
Caitlin McMurphy is a director with the Yorkton Exhibition Association. The Yorkton 4-H Spring Steer and Heifer Show will be held Thursday, Friday, and Saturday on the Yorkton Exhibition Grounds. It's time now for the Beef and Forage Report, and that's a presentation of Bumper to Bumper in Lanchenburg and Rokenville, your auto parts professionals. Let them find the parts no one else can. Open 8 to 6, Monday to Saturday. call 306-743-2332.
Beef and Forage Report.
Market uncertainty hit U.S. cattle futures yesterday, following news about avian influenza being reported in a few dairy cattle in Texas and Kansas. Dan Bossy is the president of Ag Resource Company in Chicago.
Someone who worked on a Texas farm had contracted the avian flu. That would be, of course, another species jump from bovines to we humans. And the cattle market didn't like that. We sold off sharply going into the close. Feeders down about $7. The fat cattle market, if you look back in the June contract, down around $5. So a negative day there. But the hog markets, of course, on the other side of that, if we're not eating beef, we're going to be eating pork, and the pork market rallied and up about $2. So it was a sell cattle, buy pork kind of session, and that was even against the hogs and pigs report that was slightly negative that came out on Thursday.
That's Dan Bossy, the president of Ag Resource Company in Chicago. And that's today's Beef and Forage Report.
GX94, AgriView.
A human case of avian influenza has been confirmed in a person who had contact with dairy cows presumed to be infected with the virus. It's the second case of the H5N1 strain of avian influenza identified in a person in the United States. The CDC says this infection does not change the H5N1 bird flu human health risk assessment for the U.S. general public, which it considers to be low. The health agency said people who are exposed to infected birds or animals or to environments contaminated by them are at greater risk of infection. The patient's only symptom was eye inflammation. Cases of avian influenza in dairy cattle have been confirmed in Michigan and Idaho, along with initial cases in Kansas, Texas, and New Mexico. In the midst of dryness in western Canada and an organics market stuck in a standstill, organic growers are making decisions on what to plant in the coming weeks. Chances are they may be dictated by their own rotations. Kelly Cornelius, a grain procurement specialist for grain millers in Yorkton, says commodities in general have traded sideways to slightly lower over the last year, 2.5 years. He expects to see a bit of a bump in pea production, but he doesn't expect to lose oat acres. He adds that conditions are dry in Saskatchewan, especially in the western half of the province. However, major snowfalls over the course of the winter have helped to replenish moisture levels in the southeast. CN and CPKC Rail supplied a combined 60% of hopper cars ordered in Grain Week 34, a notable deterioration from the 70% order fulfillment performance seen in Week 33. CN saw a significant decline in performance, while CPKC saw modest deterioration as compared to the prior week. In supplying 63% of cars ordered by shippers in Week 34, CN saw performance decline from the 77% order fulfillment performance seen in Week 33. CN performance remains below the 90% performance threshold for the 12th consecutive week. CPKC performance declined slightly from the prior week, with the railway supplying 58% of shipper orders in Week 34, as compared to 65% in the prior week. CPKC performance remains below the 90% threshold for the 10th consecutive week. Empire Company Limited Chief Executive Michael Medline says there's no evidence that a grocery code of conduct would raise food prices for Canadians. The president and CEO of Sobeys parent company made the comment at a Retail Council of Canada event in Toronto today. Medline says he wouldn't support a grocery code of conduct for his industry if he thought it would make retail prices higher. Last fall, Loblaw and Walmart said they wouldn't sign the code as currently drafted, stalling progress as the code neared completion. Proponents of the code say it will help level the playing field for suppliers and small grocery retailers, but Loblaw and Walmart have said they are concerned it would raise food prices for Canadians. The federal government plans to spend over $1 billion over 5 years on a national school food program that will feed an additional 400,000 school-aged children a year. The announcement came from Prime Minister Justin Trudeau and Finance Minister Chrystia Freeland at an event in Toronto yesterday, and is part of the lead-up to the federal budget, which will be brought down April 16th. The funds would flow through provinces and territories, as education is a provincial jurisdiction. In the past year, British Columbia, Manitoba, and Nova Scotia have allocated money towards school lunches. During the announcement, Freeland said the aim is to get started on the program as early as the 2024-25 school year. Canada is currently the only G7 country without a national school food program. And experts say the skyrocketing price of cocoa is just the latest example of increasingly common disruptions to the food supply chain. From lettuce to oranges and now cocoa, shoppers are seeing prices for specific foods suddenly rise, often due to climate change-related extreme weather or to geopolitical unrest. Graham Crosby, senior economist at agriculture lending firm Farm Credit Canada, says bad weather and disease in West Africa are responsible for the significant spike in cocoa prices. According to Statistics Canada inflation data, the price of confectionery items rose more than 9% between January 2023 and 2024, compared with overall inflation for food purchase from stores of 3.4%. Crosby says consumers are becoming more aware of these kinds of disruptions amid overall food inflation over the past few years. He says people are paying more attention not just to prices, but also to how their food is produced. And SaskAg Today is always available on podcast. Listen to past shows whenever you want. Find them easily by going to gx94radio.com. Also, you can hear the podcast on your Amazon Echo. Just enable the GX94 skill and choose SaskAg Today. And yes, it's free. And that's the Ag Review portion of our program. Please stay tuned. SaskAg Today will return right after this. Welcome back to SaskAg Today. I'm Doug Falconer. It's sunny and plus 3 degrees in the Yorkton-Melville region. I'll have your complete weather details coming up at the top of the hour. With strong cattle prices, the Livestock Price Insurance Program is offering the highest floor prices in the program's history. Cow-calf producers can lock in a profitable floor price for the calves that will be hitting the ground this spring. Kevin Hirsch of SaskAgToday.com has this report.
With calf prices strong and the market looking favorable, some producers may wonder why they should be interested in price insurance. Jody Griffin, program coordinator for Livestock Price Insurance in Saskatchewan, says the program offers price protection in a world filled with uncertainties.
For everything that goes up has the potential to go down. The U.S. has had an avian flu scare. You know, there was a detection in the dairy cows that was published on Monday, Tuesday, and that took this price insurance, because it really rattled the markets, and that took $14 a hundred off of the price insurance itself and off the market, obviously, because that's where these prices are coming from. So as much as, you know, fundamentally that's true, there's just too many factors out there that we just can't control. And that's the whole point of this being here. You know, foot and mouth disease is top of mind for everyone. It's the chatter, it's the talk, it's being discussed at every level of industry. And price insurance is going to be their only level of defense against an event like that, that could potentially shut our borders. So you better be safe rather than sorry.
The price you can lock in is far higher than last year at this time. Griffin urges producers to examine the various coverage levels. Locking in a somewhat lower floor price greatly reduces the premium.
top coverage right now is trending in that 3% range. So that's premium as a percentage of coverage is at that top level is at 3%. But that bottom level that we always try to get our producers to, you know, take a look at as well, well, that's running at 1.4%. And so, like, that's, you know, what how we would say that's a cheap sleeping pill, because we're sitting here, it's March, things are looking pretty darn decent, but, you know, from a cattle producing perspective and just recent history with drought and so forth that we dealt with, October's a long ways away, and a lot's gonna can potentially happen in that time frame.
Currently, the top coverage on a 600-pound steer calf comes to $2,268 with a $73 premium. Bottom coverage guarantees $2,100 for a 600-pound steer at a cost of $24. June 13th is the deadline for producers to insure their calves. Coverage levels and premiums are posted on Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Thursdays. The website lpi.ca has all the information. You can enroll through the website or call your SAS crop insurance office. There's no obligation to buy insurance once you enroll. For SaskAg Today, I'm Kevin Hirsch.
Livestock market conditions.
U.S. live cattle futures for June closed at 176.37 today. That's up 105. August live cattle closed at 173.12, up 102. May feeder cattle closed at 244.85, up 217. August feeder cattle closed at 254.65, up 3 full cents. May lean hogs closed at 93.67, down 7. June lean hogs closed at 103.72, up 22. And that's the livestock market conditions. The East Central Research Foundation and Suncrest College, based in Yorkton, has released the results of another crop study. Mike Hall is the research coordinator, and he says they studied if barley varieties should be managed differently.
This project was developed and supported by SAS Barley. Participating AgriArm sites include Outlook, Melfort, Prince Albert, Scott, Swift Current, Indian Head, and we here at Yorkton are leading the project. We've been leading barley projects for a number of years now, and this project evaluates many of the principles we've investigated in the past. It's a large trial with 24 treatments, but before we cover the results of this trial, let's give you a little history to what we've observed in the past. Much of the results we'll be discussing today are supported by either SAS Barley, Adopt, or both. One of the first questions I wanted to answer was, do newer malt barley varieties require more nitrogen? We compared the old variety Metcalf against newer varieties Bow and Synergy. Metcalf is generally 15% lower yielding than Synergy, and I suspect that the optimum rate of nitrogen for Synergy would be higher. Applying too much N to barley can cause rejection for malt due to excessive protein. In general, protein above 12.5% may result in rejection for malt. We found Metcalf would reach 12.5% protein at a lower rate of nitrogen than Synergy, which gave us the opportunity to push Synergy yields further with higher rates of nitrogen. Depending upon the economic scenario, the optimum rate of nitrogen was 10 to 20 pounds per acre higher for Synergy. So then we decided to see if levels of other inputs should vary between the same varieties of Synergy, Bow, and Metcalf. We looked at varying levels of seeding rate, nitrogen, phosphorus, potassium, plant growth regulator, and fungicide at either the flag or early heading stages. We had 15 site years of data, and I decided to group them into high and low yielding groups as I surmised the high yielding group would be more responsive to added inputs. There were 9 site years in the high yielding group and 6 in the low yielding group. Statistically, there wasn't a difference in the response to inputs between the varieties, although Metcalf did appear less responsive to nitrogen as expected. The low-yielding site years did not respond positively to any additional input, In other words, the least amount of input was the most economical. That's what happens when drought is the cause of the reduced yield potential. The application of PGR on the low-yielding droughted sites reduced the yield potential by about 10%, increased thins, and delayed maturity by a day. Not a big surprise. We have seen a 25% yield increase in our wheat work from spraying PGR. Spraying PGR during a drought is not a worthwhile practice. In our study, high-yielding barley sites responded to increased fertility, and some modest responses to fungicides were also observed. However, there were no yield responses to PGR or seed treatment, as seedling disease and lodging have been low in recent years. In our enhanced barley variety trials, we moved to test a wider range of malt and feed barley varieties and dropped Metcalf as it was a variety in decline. The malt varieties were Synergy, Connect, and Fraser. The feed varieties were Ossison, Claymore, and Oriana. These varieties were evaluated at standard versus enhanced rates of nitrogen. For our location, this was 130 versus 162 pounds of nitrogen per acre of soil plus added nitrogen. The surprise for me was that there was no evidence to suggest feed should receive more nitrogen than mulch. If you look at the crop planning guide and soil test recommendations of nitrogen for mulch versus feed, they're always higher for the feed. Our work with newer varieties of mulch and feed barley varieties doesn't really support this practice. Usually the most economic rate of nitrogen for newer varieties was often achieved before 12.5% protein was exceeded, and barley would be rejected for mulch. If the nitrogen response curve for mulch and feed is the same and feed is worth less, then the most economic rate of nitrogen for feed will be lower. Now, there are other things to consider. There is no financial penalty for over-fertilizing your feed barley with nitrogen like there is with malt barley. So the fear of malt rejection due to excessive protein is a valid reason for applying less nitrogen to malt barley. However, I suspect some of the end recommendation differences between malt and feed is based on old data, when the yield potential of malt barley was considerably less than feed. And this is no longer the case with newer varieties. But in the end, I'm not going to try to convince anyone to apply more nitrogen than you usually do to your malt barley. But I will suggest that if you are growing a new malt barley variety like Synergy, and it's coming in around 12% protein, it likely wasn't economical to fertilize your feed barley with more nitrogen than you supplied to the malt, all things being equal. We have also looked at these varieties with and without fungicide. As you know, disease pressures haven't been high as of late. But we did find that Claymore and Oriana frequently had more leaf disease, and the application of fungicide was more beneficial for these varieties in terms of disease control, yield, and lodging. We also haven't had a lot of lodging lately, and PGR applied during drought wasn't beneficial, often decreasing seed weights, test weights, and percent plumps. There was some lodging at Outlook under irrigation, and the PGR did decrease lodging and increase yield for Ossison at this location. So all of these concepts have been included into one large trial of 24 treatments. Like the enhanced barley trials of the past, we are evaluating Synergy, Connect, Fraser, Ossison, Claymore, and Oriana at enhanced nitrogen rates with and without fungicide and PGR. We were pretty dry at Yorkton, so I'm not expecting great things from the PGR or fungicide. Having said that, we did observe significantly less disease on the Oriana when sprayed with fungicide, so Oriana was still getting significant disease even in a drier year at our location. But let's go into the future and see what happened at all locations.
Well, it turned out that many of the sites were relatively dry, like Yorkton, except for ICDC, which was under irrigation, and Swift Current, which received 95% of their average rainfall. Unfortunately, some of that precipitation came in the form of hail, which greatly reduced the yield of the barley. From this figure, you can see fungicide in blue versus no fungicide in yellow did not significantly increase yield at any of the locations. For the most part, fungicide didn't affect grain protein either. However, there was an interaction at Yorkton which found the grain protein for Synergy was significantly reduced by fungicide, implying the yield may have been increased by fungicide. However, this wasn't supported by the yield data. While levels of leaf disease were very low in this study, fungicide managed to reduce leaf disease, but only for the variety Oriana. Oriana is in green, and you can see on the right the higher level of leaf disease Oriana had relative to the other varieties when untreated. When sprayed with the fungicide Trivipro, the level of leaf disease was significantly reduced for Oriana in green. The same phenomena occurred at Yorkton, Scott, and Swift Current. At Swift Current, there was also a trend for the leaf disease to be reduced by fungicide for Claymore. Both Claymore and Oriana are susceptible to netted netbludge, whereas the other varieties are more resistant. However, even when untreated, the level of leaf disease was still low for Oriana, and the application of fungicide did not result in a yield increase. PGR also didn't affect yield at most sites, as lodging was not an issue. The exception occurred at Swift Current, where PGR actually increased yield. One might assume PGR may have helped with the standability after the hail event. However, this hypothesis was not supported by the lodging ratings. PGR did reduce the height of barley, but it seemed to be more effective on the malt barley varieties in this study than the feed barley varieties. At Indian Head, the height of the malt barley varieties Synergy, Connect, and Fraser were significantly reduced by the PGR MODIS. However, the heights of the feed barley varieties, Ossesson, Claymore, and Oriana were not significantly reduced. At Yorkton, malt barley varieties were once again significantly reduced by PGR, but the feed varieties were not. This same pattern also emerged at Melfort if we cheat a bit and use the less conservative LSD to separate means instead of the Tookie's test. Malt barley varieties significantly reduced. Feed barley varieties or not. And finally, enhancing the rate of nitrogen by 30 pounds per acre did not increase yields at most sites, except Indian Head. However, an increase in yield at this site was only detected for the varieties Connect and Claymore. Enhancing nitrogen did increase grain protein at most sites, and this would be expected. So, in summary, conditions were dry, disease and lodging was low, and there wasn't much information to suggest varieties should be managed differently. Oriana is more susceptible to disease, netted net blotch, and if pressures are high, I would assume Oriana would be more likely to benefit from fungicide. I also suspect that the malt barley varieties in this study would be more likely to benefit from the application of PGR when lodging is an issue. Two reasons for this. One, PGR was often more effective at reducing the height of the malt barley varieties in this study compared to the feed. And two, the malt varieties generally had lower lodging ratings compared to the feed. Lodging resistance for the malt barley varieties Synergy, Connect, and Fraser were fair, good and good, respectively, whereas the lodging ratings for the feed barley varieties Ossesson, Claymore, and Oriana were good, very good, and very good, respectively. Thanks to SAS Barley and Sustainable CAP for supporting this work.
That's Mike Hall. He is the research coordinator for the East Central Research Foundation and Suncrest College, based in Yorkton. Please stay tuned. Your Commodities Update is coming up next.
Commodities Update.
Canola futures closed up across the board today. May canola closed at $6.35.30, up $1.10. July canola closed at $6.44.10, up $1.30. May Minneapolis wheat closed at $6.27.5, down 7.25 cents. May Kansas City wheat closed at $5.63.25, down 12.25 cents. May Chicago wheat closed at $5.45.25, down 11.75 cents. May corn closed at $4.26.5, down 9 cents. May soybeans closed at $11.74 per bushel, down 11.75 cents. May oats closed at 352 and three quarters, down 3 cents. And that's the commodities update. Please stay tuned. SaskAg Today will be back right after these messages. Welcome back to SaskAg Today. I'm Doug Faulkner. The House of Commons Agriculture Committee got an earful recently from a group called the Canadian Equine Exporters Association. The committee is reviewing Private Members Bill C-355, introduced by Liberal MP Tim Lewis some time ago. It calls for an end to the practice of shipping live horses by air for slaughter in foreign countries, mainly Japan. Lewis calls the practice cruel, and he believes the vast majority of Canadians agree with that assessment. But Kevin Wilson with the Exporters Association tore a strip off of the committee over the bill and some of its contents.
First and foremost, we want to bring to your attention that our industry believes that we have not had enough meaningful consultations with all industry stakeholders, including exporters, producers, multiple First Nations communities, and the airline pilots on this bill prior to it being introduced into Parliament. While some members of this committee did agree to take meetings with us, 45 minutes is not near enough to gain the true insight to the economic impact on this bill that will have on Canadian farm families, nor to understand the immense implications to animal welfare that this bill will create. Proof of this is in the complete and utter misconception that these horses are only 18 months of age when they are exported. We have no idea where the government heard this, however, it is not accurate at all. Export contracts state today horses must be between the ages of 24 to 36 months prior to arriving in Japan. My next point, Mr. Chair, is the well-funded animal activist campaign that has sought a few celebrity endorsements to promote their cause to the public based on falsehoods and inaccurate depictions of the facts. This agenda pulls at the heartstrings of many Canadians. However, they do not represent the actual facts. This is not an animal transportation issue. This is an animal end use issue. And we have heard from independent professionals like the CFIA and Jennifer Woods, an animal welfare expert who has witnessed this firsthand right before we are loading these animals, while we are loading these animals on the farm. They have witnessed this, and they have both come back to the same conclusions, that we are exceeding the current standards set out in the Health of Animals Act and the Health of Animals Regulations. These are the facts, Mr. Chair, and facts don't care about your feelings. Has anyone in this committee taken the time to visit the manufacturer of these boxes that we load these animals into? Has anybody at this committee taken the time to witness where it, in live action, these horses being loaded onto the airplanes? Because all we keep hearing about is the cramped conditions that exist. However, the facts from CFIA and animal welfare experts and industry professionals all agree 100% this is not the case. So why are we still hearing this point?
That's Keith Wilson with the Canadian Equine Exporters Association. Bill C-355 has the support of the Liberals and the NDP, while the Tories and Bloc oppose it.
Farm Bulletin Board.
Just a reminder that the Yorkton 4-H Spring Steer and Heifer Show is coming up this week in Yorkton. It starts Thursday with weighing from 11 until 1. And all participants have to be in the show arena by 1 o'clock for the announcement of teams. There's a showmanship clinic for Cloverbud and Junior from 1:30 until 2, for the intermediates and seniors from 2 until 2:45. All 4-H members are welcome to participate in both clinics. And that's all the time we have for today's Farm Bulletin Board. It's now 1 o'clock in Saskatchewan, 2 o'clock in Manitoba. Time to check the GX94 precision weather forecast for the Quill Lakes, Hudson Bay, Swan River, Broadview, Mooseman, Indian Head, and Yorkton, Melville, Roblin, Russell regions today. Mainly sunny, winds west-northwest at 10 to 20, and a high of plus 4 degrees. For tonight, partly cloudy, winds south-southeast at 10 to 20, a low of minus 5. For tomorrow, mainly sunny, winds southeast at 20 to 30, a high of plus 4, an overnight low of minus 4. For Thursday, partly sunny, winds southeast at 15 to 25, a high of plus 4. For Friday, partly sunny, a high of plus 6. And for Saturday, partly sunny, a high of plus 8. In the Paw, it's 5 degrees. Swan River and Dauphin are at 4. Brandon, 3. Show Lake Russell and Roblin, 2. Regina, Saskatoon, Hudson Bay, Broadview, Mooseman, Indian Head, all reporting in at 7. Wynyard, Wadena, Kelvington, 6. The Yorkton-Melville region has a sunny sky, a west wind at 11 kilometers an hour. 69% is the relative humidity. The temperature is 3 degrees. That's your agriculture weather, and that'll do it for SaskAg Today for today. Be sure to tune in again tomorrow at 12:15 Saskatchewan time for another edition of the program. It's time now for the news and sports headlines.